And how did the director get back to CAU headquarters, given he went into the underwater Arctic structure?
He obviously transferred, Rax said.
What? I asked.
Consider the situation, Rax said. Taz has proven to us he has transfer tech. Where could he have acquired the technology? Aboard the Polarian base seems like the most logical answer. How could the director have left the underwater base without anyone noticing? Through the same application of ancient Polarian tech, through a transfer mechanism.
You think Kaz and the director are working together? I asked Rax.
That does not hold, Rax said. Kaz is killing clones. By his own admission, the Neanderthal hates them. I think he and the director are at loggerheads. It does seem that both have pilfered the Arctic Ocean structure for ancient Polarian tech, though.
And that's what the Antares Domini wants? I asked. He wants Polarian tech?
That is my belief, Rax said. But that has yet to be established.
So what's our next move? I asked.
We could go back to CAU headquarters, Rax said.
Looking for what, exactly? I asked.
The Chrono Warp. It's not there,
Jenna said. Where is it? I asked. She shrugged, yawning. That caused me to yawn as well. You know, I said, I'm beat, you're beat. It's time to get some sleep.
Where?
She asked.
You left the truck in the shopping center parking lot.
We'll head in the other direction, I said. There's a hotel over there. I pointed in the direction of the hotel. We can get a new vehicle in the morning, one that isn't hot.
Okay,
Jenna said, yawning again. I stood, helped her up, gathered our empty plates, and set them in the receptacle set out for them. Jenna leaned heavily against me and limped as we went outside. The cooler night air felt good. Across the street was the hotel. We began crossing the parking lot to get to the street.
Logan,
Rax said.
I detect aliens.
Where? I asked. Before Rax could answer, side doors on several parked vans rolled up and 300-pound Tosks charged out. I shoved Jenna behind me and put Rax in her hands. Get out of here, I shouted. I drew my blaster and got off a shot, dropping one of the hairy Tosks as foul-smelling smoke billowed from his chest. A squad of them hit me then and bore me onto the blacktop, the back of my head hitting it as I went down. It made me groggy and slowed my reflexes. My blaster went rolling. Then I was roaring with rage, flailing, biting, scratching, hitting. A Tosk yelped with pain. I laughed. Maybe that made the others mad. One of them put his hairy hands around my throat and began to choke me. I surged with my remaining strength, throwing a Tosk off my left arm. I began gasping and thrashing harder as I tried to breathe. More Tosks piled onto my limbs. My reaction slowed as I could no longer sip air. My eyesight dimmed, and that was the last thing I remembered. Chapter 17. I woke up feeling groggy. I lay on a cot in a place with a low gray ceiling. Sitting up disoriented me. I moved too fluidly, lightly, and everything felt wrong. Swinging my feet over the edge of the cot, standing, I shot up toward the low ceiling, banging my head against it. I cried out in pain, shoved off, and hit the floor at velocity. I couldn't understand this. What had happened? Then I recalled Jenna, the Panera parking lot, the Tosks. The Tosks, I said. Hey, what's going on here? No one answered. I pushed off the floor and glided toward the cot. I had a terrible feeling that I knew where I was and why there was so little gravity. The Tosks must have transferred me to the moon. I sat on the cot and put my face in my hands. This was just great. This was just... Debbie, I said. Maybe I was in the same confinement area as my woman. Something buzzed. The lock on my door? A werewolf-like Tosk, much heavier and taller than me, opened the cell door. He looked like the ones I'd seen in Friday's station. He wore a leather harness instead of clothes. With all that hair, fur, whatever, these guys hardly needed clothes. The Tosk jangled as he glided into the cell. What do you want? I said. He cocked his head and jabbered in his alien tongue, and I realized that I still understood their extraterrestrial language.
Are you hungry? He asked.
Yeah, I said in the same tongue-twisting way. He dug in a pouch attached to his harness and tossed me a plastic-wrapped sandwich and a water bottle. I grabbed the bottle and put it between my legs while I tore off the sandwich's wrapping.
Eat,
the Tosk said. He He turned around and left as the cell door slid shut behind him. I heard the buzz again as it locked. I ate. I was famished. That made me wonder how long I'd been out. I drank the water, careful to cap the bottle after each sip. I didn't want any water floating around as I'd seen in the movies. My throat was sore where a Tosk had strangled me. The muscles I'd twisted in the parking lot fight ached, but worked well enough. Like I said earlier, gene therapy had given me a quicker healing body. Did the Tosks or their master know that? Maybe I needed to act more hurt. They would expect a regular human to be injured. I had to hide whatever aces I had. Shortly, the cell door buzzed again and a Tosk in harness stood there. I couldn't tell if it was the same Tosk. They all looked alike to me.
Can you walk far? The Tosk asked.
That confirmed they didn't know about my quick healing ability. I guess, I said. The Tosk cocked his wolfish head.
You are on the satellite.
What?
You call it the moon. You are on it. You will walk with lighter gravity than you are used to.
Oh, I said. The way the Tosk spoke made it seem that he'd memorized the little speech.
Come, he said.
I tried to make the glide walking or bouncing seem painful to me. I purposely lagged behind as we moved through a long, curving corridor. Once I floated past a window and saw the blackness of space and the stars out there. They glittered in amazing profusion. As I went up during the next stride, I could see the dark moonscape. I looked for the blue earth, but couldn't find it. Did that mean I was on the dark side of the moon? As I followed the Tosk, I felt a terrible sense of loneliness. I was on the moon, on an alien base. I didn't know if I'd ever get back to the earth. The only intelligent life was this furry Tosk. I wanted another human to talk to. I noticed the Tosk had halted before an open hatch. He pointed at it. The creature possessed a longer arm than a regular human. He was like a werewolf. Maybe one of his distant ancestors had come to Earth and begun the ancient legend. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I walk-glided into the room. Two Tosks, one waiting on either side of the hatch, grabbed me as I moved in. I thought about fighting them. The bigger Tosk clicked a collar to my neck. They both shoved me toward a chair in the middle of the room. I grunted as I folded against the chair.
Sit, the bigger one said.
I looked back at them. They looked exactly like the Tosk outside. The hatch had closed, so I could no longer see him.
Sit,
the bigger one said again, motioning with his long-fingered hand. I sat. The hatch opened and they both departed. Before I could decide whether to charge after them or not, the hatch shut again. A new one whirred open. I heard rather than saw it. I spun around. Dominique Baran in his metallic suit float-walked into the chamber. He seemed the same as before, with his long, narrow head, hawkish nose, black pelt of hair. His dark eyes glittered with malice and with that furious intellectual energy. He sat down on a chair, crossed his legs like a British lord, and leaned back in his seat.
Logan, he said, fingering a flat device. I have been looking forward to this for quite some time.
He touched the middle of the device and a shock jolted through the collar into me. As I jerked involuntarily in my chair, I realized this was the beginning of an interrogation.
Chapter 18.
Crawling Logan,
Lord Baran said in an easy manner as he scratched his left cheek with the control device. I didn't know what crawling meant, a type of rank maybe, but I couldn't be sure. I could feel my eyes tracking the device in his hand. It took an effort of will to tear my gaze from it, and still greater effort to keep from fingering the damned collar. Baran smirked. I felt he understood my distress, and I hated him for it.
I have given you a slight discomfort, Baran said. I have done so in order to demonstrate how the proceedings can go. It is not my wish to travel down that avenue, however.
At that point, I touched the collar. I did it as much to give myself a second to think as to see if I could wrench it off. I gave it a tug to no positive effect. Was Baran toying with me, or did he just mean to talk? What would I lose playing along with the charade? If he'd shocked me to show me how much I wanted to avoid more shocking, the Antares Domini had succeeded. It didn't take a genius to devise such a plan. I cleared my throat as I considered the right angle to play. I sat up, nodding as one gentleman to another, and said, If you could remove this annoyance, sir, I would much appreciate it. I'm sure that's so, and such an occurrence may transpire in the near future, but... Baran set the control device on his lap before rubbing a long forefinger against his jaw. That had a few matters we must discuss first. Ah, I said, nodding as if I knew what he was getting at. My first instinct was to treat you as a mere creature, Baran said. Yours is a lowly world, after all, with technologically and mentally retarded inhabitants. Your initial evasion of capture, however, impressed me. Yes, I was impressed, if dismayed, because I thought you'd committed suicide. I'd so wanted your... knowledge. Then, to discover that your leap had indeed been a masterful stroke to take you out of my jamming range, that was well done, crawling Logan. I shrugged. I see that you practice modesty, which the inhabitants of your backwater world take as a sign of good breeding. I do not hold to such a theory. I believe in strict honesty. Oh, I said. Baran smiled indulgently. I apprehend your quick wit. You do not rail at me. Rather, you are astonished that I treat you, not as an equal, but at least as a being that I can reason with. That removes you from mere creature status. Do you understand what I am saying? I do, I said. He nodded and seemed to hesitate, finally tilting his long head. I have spoken with your mate. Is that the correct word? We're not formally married, I said. Baran waved that aside. I am uninterested in formalities. I deal in actualities. You hold her in sexual esteem, is that not so? Yes, I said. I note the drop in your tone of voice just now. You are showing displeasure at my words, but in a measured manner. I applaud that, as it shows me that I am correct in assigning you intelligence status. I am still attempting to gauge the full range of your intellect. If it is high enough, it would be a crime against rationality and good breeding to apply the shock collar to you. Quite, I said. But I have not yet reached my final conclusion regarding you. I wonder if excessive training could, simulate intelligence. I don't follow you, I said. I think you do, but we shall let that pass, for the moment. I nodded. He chuckled. You do try so hard crawling. I suppose it is intimidating speaking to such a rarefied intelligence as myself. I thought he was an arrogant prick and said, not at all, in order to piss him off. I was getting tired of his airy attitude. My plan worked. His dark eyes glittered with malice and he leaned minutely toward me. The implication of your reaction, I suppose, is that you've spoken to rarefied intelligences before. That's true, I said. Baran snapped his fingers and smiled, showing ultra-white teeth. Yes, yes, we are approaching the heart of the matter. Tell me about these former intelligences. I realized I'd slipped up. This was about Polarians. Rax had believed that, and I was beginning to think the crystal was right. I am your guest, I said. It is only right that I treat my host with respect. To be precise, Baran said, you are my prisoner. Still, your idea concerning respect is correct. Please proceed. There was a Star Corps, I said. I'm uncertain if you know about it. Explain, he said. I told him about the Rax Prime construct, fashioned long ago by a Polarian scientist. I noted how his eyes radiated greater intensity when I mentioned Polarians. Without a doubt, he was keenly interested in them. What happened to this artificial intelligence? He asked. I destroyed it. Baran froze. You? He said in a choked voice. You'd have me believe that this cosmic creation faced final extinction due to your charisma. I'm unsure what you mean by charisma, I said. The Star Corps perished due to my predatory skills. I'm a warrior, a soldier in the cause of Earth. Baran shook his head as if trying to shake out a foolish idea. He raised the control device, letting a lean thumb hover over the button. He looked at me in a questioning manner. I can sniff out falsehoods, he stated. Let me propose an alternative theory, I said, getting into the swing of his weird way of talking. You have fixed beliefs. When reality conforms to your beliefs, you think events move in their proper channel. When reality confounds you by being other than you believe, you lose your composure and lash out in rage. For instance, you're about to angrily shock me because I have turned out to be more creative than you can accept.
No, he said in a brittle voice. I am about to teach you the result of lies.
If you press the button, I said, you will act against good breeding. He showed his teeth in a feral grin and pressed the button. I moaned in agony as the pain continued for a span of time. At last, the pain stopped. I found myself twisted on the floor, sweating profusely.
We will talk again, Baran said in a strained voice. I must consult. Bah! I will not explain to one of your devious nature. Clearly, the Palladians have trained you in civilized decorum and rhetoric. You seek.
It isn't what I seek, I said, swaying as I stood, having interrupted him. It is what you seek. Baran froze again, but thawed out faster this time.
What do you think I seek? He asked, leaning toward me.
It's clear.
Speak, he said. I order it.
I wanted to tell him to go to hell. I did not, because I didn't want to get shocked again. I hated the training collar.
You seek the Palladians, I said.
He stared at me until finally a grim smile slid into place.
Sit down, he said. I thought a bath in the sensitizer would aid in the interrogation. The bath would have made you 10 times as sensitive to pain as now. It is a wonderful tool in the training of creatures. However, I may have actually erred. This reasoning on your part, it seems to indicate intelligence status. Maybe I should remove the collar.
I said nothing.
Oh my, he said. Such restraint is most difficult to teach. If you are a creature, you must be at the top of the chart of animalism.
Still, I said nothing.
I seek more than the Palladians, Baran told me. You must think of them as deities. Am I right?
No, I said. Baran's head swayed back.
Indeed. Is this another lie?
The Palladians are too arrogant to be gods.
Too arrogant?
Baran seemed to collapse against the chair. He bent his head and thought. Finally, he studied me.
What causes you to say that too arrogant?
I couldn't figure out why Baran was so astonished by my words. Something cautioned me to say as little as I could. The collar reminded me I might not have much choice.
Come, come, crawling, quit stalling. It indicates subterfuge on your part.
Palladians act and speak arrogantly, I said. Thus, they are arrogant. Baran began blinking furiously. At last, he leaned back and roared with laughter. It was high-pitched and unpleasant. I had no idea what had him so delighted. The Dominie wiped tears of mirth from his cheeks.
You are a marvel, Logan. Yes, you are intelligent. That is beyond doubt. That does not necessarily mean I will remove the collar. It does mean that shocking you is a criminal act. Sometimes, though, the ends justify the means. If I can...
He shook his head, and then he became urgent.
Did the chief Palladian tell you his name?
I almost said no. At the last second, I said, his name was Argon. Baran exhaled sharply, stood, and clapped his hands. The original cell door behind me opened. A Tosk peered in.
Take him, Baran said. Ready him for transport to Earth.
Dominie, I said. Baran had already turned toward a different exit. He paused, looking back at me. Is Debbie coming with us? I asked. He shook his head.
Your woman is at the...
He cocked his head.
She's at the Saturn station, as you would think of it. Perhaps you shall be reunited with her. First, though, you will show me where you met the Palladian Argon. Do you agree?
Why not? I said.
Good, Baran said. Excellent.
With that, he turned and strode out of the room. I followed the Tosk, and as we walked down the curving corridor, I finally realized what might have Baran so excited. He must have thought Palladians were long dead. I think most were. Then, to discover I'd spoken to a Palladian, it may have abruptly altered Baran's plans. That might give me the chance I needed to turn things around with us, and soon. Chapter 19 On the dark side of the moon, after having fed me and allowing me to shower while someone cleaned up my clothes, a Tosk prodded me up a ramp into a floater, one of the semi-sized transport vehicles that I'd first seen at the CAU headquarters complex. The Tosk joined others of his kind, about 20 of them. Each wore a harness and a helmet, and each carried a beam carbine. I'd noticed there were two more floaters in the small hangar bay, both vehicles filling up with Tosks. Each craft was narrow and long like a freeway semi, with a bubble turret at either end. A Tosk sat inside each turret and controlled a larger beam weapon. The turrets were much like those in World War II bombers, with their 50-caliber machine guns sticking from the bubble turrets of those planes. A Tosk stood at a forward control panel, watching a screen and manipulating various buttons and dials. The floater began to hum and vibrate the slightest bit. There were no chairs. Everyone had to stand or sit on the metal floor. The hatch opened and Lord Baran entered. He wore a sidearm and a helmet and carried what looked like a baton in his right hand. The baton glowed at the tip and had several buttons along the side. It wasn't wooden, but metal, like polished steel. Baran moved toward me and pointed the baton at a wall. The area of the bulkhead shimmered and acted like a screen, showing the moon's surface and the sun and the black sky.
"That is our first destination," he said, making eye contact with me.
I noted the moon was lit instead of dark. He must mean we were going to travel to the side facing Earth. "We're transferring there?" I asked. Baran gave me a cool study before shaking his head.
"Is this a deliberate act of ignorance, or do you truly not understand transfer technology?"
"I fail to perceive the thrust of your question," I said, as if annoyed with him.
"Do you think we can transfer through the endless mass of the interior moon?"
I had presumed that an Antares Domini would possess superior technology.
"Superior to the Galactic God?" he asked.
I shrugged, since I wasn't sure how to answer.
"Does it surprise you that I know you think of yourself as a probationary member of the God?"
"I'm only surprised the Director broke so easily," I said. Baran smiled, pointing the baton at me and tapping it twice against my chest.
"You strain so hard to be devious," he said. "It is amusing. The only negative is that it presupposes I am an idiot. That displeases me, crawling Logan."
"You keep using that word. What does crawling mean?" He raised his eyebrows.
"It is an honorific of sorts. A crawling is above the animals, above the creatures, but a mere infant in understanding and knowledge."
"Are the Tosks creatures?"
"Can you think otherwise?" Baran asked.
"I noticed that one pilots the floater."
"I control the floater, as you put it, as I control the Tosk. The creature does not choose our destination. Do you suppose a knife chooses where it shall cut a prime rib, or do you cut the meat merely using the knife as a tool?"
"Point made," I grumbled.
"At least you are teachable.
I shall give you that.
Too many intelligent beings refuse to learn. I am gratified to see that you are not one of those. Perhaps there was a reason why the Polarians chose your backwater planet."
"I'm curious," I said. Baran nodded. "If the Polarians chose Earth, doesn't that imply humans are an intelligent race?"
"Are the Tosks intelligent?" Baran asked.
"You view them as creatures."
"That is because I actually see reality for what it is. I suspect that you Terrans are sentimentalists, and thus believe that an upright humanoid has to be intelligent. Certainly, the Tosks are more intelligent than chimpanzees, but not by much. Yet, to answer your questions, I at first believed the Polarians chose Earth because Terrans were a good servant race. I am beginning to wonder, however, if my studies have misled me."
"Meaning you're teachable?" I asked. Baran stared at me with his burning gaze. The Tosks around us shifted uneasily, many of them backing away from him.
"Shall I strike you, Logan, or do you wish a shocking in front of the animals?"
"I prefer neither," I said.
"That is not the choice I am giving you."
"I refuse to choose between two such base actions," I replied. Baran rubbed his jaw with the end of the baton.
"Are you attempting to imitate me?"
he asked. "Yes," I said in a clipped way.
"For that, I shall forego abasing you before the animals. Instead, I will give you a warning. Attempt to insult me at your peril. I am a Domini of the Antares Institute. Among the stars, that is one of the highest ranks, as it means I am among the most intelligent beings in existence. Do you understand?"
"I do, Domini." He rubbed his cheek again, and his dark eyes swirled with emotion.
"Enough," he said softly.
Around us, the Tosks began to relax from their agitated state. Like dogs, they seemed to sense Baran's moods.
You spoke to Argon, Baran said. Where on earth did you do that?
In Greenland, I said.
Describe the region to me.
Do you have a globe? He pointed the baton at a bulkhead and the earth appeared on it.
You are seeing the planet as it is, Baran explained. We have already traveled around the moon to a direct view of your world. We can transfer that at any time.
I stepped closer to the image before glancing at him. Can you enlarge the picture? He manipulated his baton. The earth appeared to leap closer. Up here, near the North Pole, I said, is Greenland.
A snowbound region, Baran observed. Why then is it called Greenland?
A Dark Age explorer gave it that name to entice colonists there.
More deceit, Baran said while shaking his head. Show me now. Where in Greenland did you speak to Argon?
I pointed to the place where I'd found the guard ship. It was an approximation, of course. Baran said as he manipulated the baton.
It appears that there is harmful radiation in that location. Can you explain that?
I told him about the space battle between the Greenland base that Argon had run and the space pirates trying to pilfer the Star Corps for their own use.
The place is destroyed, you say? Baran asked.
I nodded.
I see, Baran said.
Abruptly, he faced me.
We will go there. Perhaps something has been overlooked. This underground base might well possess deeper regions that escaped the space assault.
I doubt it, I said. I heard that the CAU scoured the site and found nothing.
Let us see if the Terran organization can match my expertise.
With that, the wall screen and the view of Earth vanished, and we transferred to Greenland. Chapter 20. I had to admit, however reluctantly, that Lord Baran surprised me, as he found something that everyone else had missed. We'd only cruised a short time across the radiated snow and ice of Greenland before he made his discovery. From within the floater, Baran and I watched a wall screen. I couldn't remember any particular mountain or snow formation from when I'd been here last. I did recall the bleakness of interior Greenland. Fortunately, I hadn't had to go outside yet and endure the intense cold.
There, Baran said.
He pointed it out to me on the screen. We saw a portion of the ancient space cannon that had fired on the pirates 2 years ago. According to the sensors, the place was highly radiated.
Interesting,
Baran said shortly as he finished scanning data that, to me, moved across the screen in a blur. If I were to guess, it appeared that he could read 10,000 words a minute. He gave instructions to the piloting Tosk. The werewolf-like creature made adjustments and we transferred once more. My head swayed in surprise at what I saw. We're underground? I asked.
How perceptive of you, Baran said dryly. There are higher crushed levels above us. We won't try to go there. This is the deepest level I could find. Let us see if there is anything of interest remaining down here.
The semi-sized floater negotiated the deep tunnel at a crawling speed. Searchlights from the vehicle roved over rock, embedded metal, and the occasional stalactite-like icicle. The passing vehicle broke off the longer icicles. The tunnel was huge and curved constantly. At last, we reached a gleaming metal garage door-like hatch. Baran rubbed his hands in obvious anticipation. He detached the baton to his belt as if one or the other was made of adhesive.
What lies beyond the hatch? He asked me.
I have no idea, I said.
Do you notice that control panel next to the side of the hatch?
I had been noticing it and now nodded.
Can you activate it? Baran asked.
I doubt it, I said.
According to the sensors, the panel is old, thousands of years old. I cannot detect a power source that would cause the hatch to open for us. Fortunately,
Baran barked an order at the piloting Tosk. A moment later, the floater transferred to the other side of the hatch. We'd reappeared in a vast chamber. This one had walls made of rusted metal. I could not spy any icicles. Instead, there were banks of large stasis tubes. Like the ones I'd seen in the past, these were tubular and seemed to be constructed of clear glass or a glass-like substance. My heart beat faster and my mouth became dry. In the tubes were seemingly perfectly preserved Ice Age beasts. Woolly mammoths, saber-toothed cats, great sloths, and dire wolves. There were no humanoids this time, unlike before.
You peer at the creatures with marvel, Baran observed. What do they mean to you?
Great age, I said, bemused. All these animals are long extinct. They were supposed to have died out, I don't know, 10,000 years ago.
Interesting, Baran said. Yes, we appear to be on the right trail. Wouldn't you agree?
I do, I said, because there was nothing else to say and I knew he expected a response.
I would like you to form a conjecture, Baran said. Why would Polarians put such beasts in stasis tubes down here?
I have no idea.
Have you seen such stasis tubes before?
I sighed inwardly, wondering if he really could tell when I lied. I decided to tell the truth, as I couldn't see how that would help Baran. Thus, I told him about previous stasis tubes holding Neanderthals and other hominids, and the tubes that had held Polarians.
Ah,
Baran said, his eyes shining eerily.
No wonder the Galactic Guard keeps the rest of the universe from Earth. This is amazing. The Polarians are real. They are not a myth. Can you conceive of the knowledge they must possess?
Lord Baran, I said, I feel I should caution you. The tall Antaran gazed upon me as if in wonder.
Speak, speak. By all means, give me your precious warning.
I have learned something of the Polarians. I have spoken with one and seen the greatest handiwork of another. They seem to seek godhood, to climb above all other races.
Exactly, Baran said. You're merely confirming my extensive research.
Seeking divinity wasn't their great achievement, but their greatest error, I said. They reached too high. They became powerful and deeply knowledgeable, but in the end that destroyed them. They still maintain the normal greed, lust, and envy that seems to be the lot of all intelligent beings.
Are you seeking to give me religious instruction?
Baran asked in amusement.
Huh?
I asked.
I have studied various religious texts of many different races. Almost to a one, they instruct a species to accept their lot. They warn against excessive pride. They warn against seeking godhood. In a word, they warn against the highest evolution that seeks to climb to the stars and beyond as a being becomes greater than his surroundings. The only religious texts that appealed to me were the ones that promised an eventual accession into godhood. Do you not understand, Kraling Logan? For the rare individual with massive insight and training, that is a future reward of expansion of being. I will ascend to the highest rank in existence. I will be greater than any other in the universe. By following the path of the Polarians, I will become supreme.
But they're extinct, I said.
No, he said as his eyes burned with a fierce passion. They have moved on to a better place. This I know from my studies. The Earth was the launch point. That is why this planet is off limits to galactic civilization. Long ago, the Polarians set up the Galactic Guard. The Guard allows you simpletons to play in the ruins of the launch point. What better disguise than others seeing you apish dolts destroying one another in your petty squabbles?
Baran straightened.
I am a dominie of the Antares Institute. I study a thing to its bitter end. I have learned ideas and concepts and prepared for this visit to the launch point.
He abruptly took the baton and used the end to rub his cheek, regarding me closely. You hope to find Polarians? I asked. Baran did not answer me as his eyes seemed to bore into my soul. If the Polarians still live, I said, they will destroy you for your presumptions.
I think not, he said.
If the Polarians are so great and powerful as you've described them, how can you think to thwart them? Baran smiled cryptically.
I have prepared. You have no idea of who or what you are dealing with in me. I am the greatest dominie of the Institute, and this will be my greatest achievement.
Because of this cavern? I asked. Baran ignored me as he spoke harshly to the tasks. The pilot grounded the floater. With another manipulation, the task opened a hatch. Freezing air billowed into the floater. I shivered as I was only wearing my summer garments. The tasks didn't seem to mind the cold, while a blue nimbus now surrounded Baran.
Are you ready?
He asked me, and his voice sounded distant, as if he spoke across a chasm. That must have been a property of the protective nimbus. I shrugged as I shivered anew. Baran spoke. A task shoved a flashlight into my hands while another bundled me into a heavy coat. Then, with me leading the way, Baran and his tasks exited the floater and entered the deep Greenland cavern. Chapter 21. I stayed with Baran for a time. The deep cavern was bigger than I expected, and maybe bigger than Baran had imagined. Slowly, I began to wander around, playing my flashlight here and there. There were more stasis tubes. Some of them were empty, and might have once held man-sized beings. Some of them held alien things. Those were strange creatures with blob-like bodies the size of Labradors. Each possessed many rubbery-seeming tentacles.
"Do you recognize those?" Baran asked.
I shook my head. I'd never seen anything like them. Maybe the horror on my face convinced him I was telling the truth. "What are they?" I asked.
"Workers of sorts," Baran said. "The oldest records..."
He fell silent, giving his head a shake.
"I wonder why they're in stasis tubes."
"Are you going to thaw them?"
"No,"
he said in a decisive voice. It made me wonder if I should try to revive them. There weren't many of the blob creatures, but I didn't see a machine to wake them or any controls on the individual stasis tubes. I shivered despite the heavy coat, and the frigid air made me cough. I wondered if any radiation had sunken down here. I couldn't see how it hadn't. The air was stale, the dark oppressiveness and the sense of antiquity weighing on my spirit. Baran seemed insane. He certainly had outrageous ambition. His talk earlier reminded me of the devil, aka Satan, who had made similar claims, according to the Bible, toward dethroning God. That hadn't ended well for Satan, getting him kicked out of heaven. It also hadn't ended well for Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden when Satan had told them they could be like God. I doubted this was going to end well for Baran, either. I didn't want to be around him when he met his end. Of course, before then, he could cause a lot of ruin. I didn't want him messing around with humanity. What were those blob creatures? Why had it surprised Baran to see them? He believed them very old, clearly. Only the oldest records appeared to speak or possibly hint about them. More than anything, I wanted to rescue Debbie. How was I supposed to get all the way to Saturn? And if I did get out there, how would I know where to find her? As I wandered around the underground cavern, I thought about Jenna and Rax, about Kaz and the director. I played my light on the floor, heard a strange sound, felt a moment of disorientation, and stumbled forward, bringing up the light. It played on a machine. I hadn't seen that a moment ago. I turned around and moved my light back and forth. I didn't see any tasks, any of their lights, or any sign of Baran. I listened, but couldn't hear them either. Where had everyone gone? What had the momentary disorientation meant? I approached the machine. It was rectangular, the height of a science table in a high school laboratory, and about 20 feet long. There were dials and buttons on it. Everything looked powerless, though. I touched the machine, or was the entire thing a control panel? Experimentally, I pressed a button and twisted a dial. Absolutely nothing happened that I could see. I listened. I didn't hear anything different. Finally, I saw flashlight beams in the distance. I'd traveled much farther than I'd realized. How had I gotten so far? It didn't make sense. Now that I thought about it, I was surprised Baran hadn't given me a few Tosk bodyguards. I touched the shock collar. I bet it had a homing device. I bet Baran knew exactly where I'd gone. He may even have left me alone, thinking I knew what this place was and would try for something to free myself. That something would likely be interesting to him. I examined the long panel more closely. Baran believed that some Polarians still existed. He claimed they had gone to a better place, that Earth had been the launch point. That could mean a number of things. A little over a year ago, I'd used a rip in the Bermuda Triangle to move into a strange realm that had taken me to some sort of pocket world. There had been a great body of water, islands, and a portal to a hellish place filled with parasitical Isham. A year before that, I'd reached Far Butte, Nevada, where the Star Corps had ruled, where Debbie had lived for many years since the 50s. Could there be more side pockets? One of them the place where the Polarians had gone? I rubbed a dial as I thought about that. My idea seemed as good a bet as any. Why was the Earth a focus for these side pockets, as it were? Was reality weaker here? I mean, was Earth the Bermuda Triangle of the Milky Way galaxy? That was an interesting thought. Maybe that's what had drawn the Polarians here in the first place. At that point, in the distance, I saw harsh green beams crisscrossing the darkness. It seemed the Tosks were firing their carbines. I heard faint shouts, possible roars, and then witnessed a great flash of intensely bright light. The light expanded like a plasma discharge. I thought I could see tiny tusks caught in the light burning at a furious rate. Then, to my astonishment, I saw hovering blob things firing red rays. The expanding light incinerated more than a few of the blob things. The alien creatures blasted apart like jelly, goo from them flying everywhere. What in the world was going on over there? Was I going crazy? I shook my head. I didn't believe I was mad. My collar tingled. It was an unpleasant and constant sensation. It made me think that Baran was trying to fry me, but that for some reason not enough energy reached the collar for it to do its normal trick. I studied the black panel. Maybe I'd accidentally unfrozen the blob creatures. As the collar continued to tingle against my neck, I kept turning dials and pressing buttons. The board never lit up. I did not hear motors rev or anything else to indicate that I was doing anything more than acting like a kid playing in a farmyard on a tractor sitting there with the ignition off. I heard a distant whine and there was a flash like a wink. The collar immediately stopped tingling against my neck. I was filled with a grim certainty that Baran had piled his remaining tasks into the floater and transferred out of here. That would have taken the machine wirelessly powering my collar to a point far enough away that the collar no longer energized. I put both sets of fingers under the collar and strained with everything I had. I wrenched the collar, twisted, heaved, and began to pant from the exertion. I wanted this thing off my neck. Finally, exhaustion forced me to stop. I was at my wit's end as to what to do next. In the end, I started back for the stasis tubes with the blob creatures. I wanted to know the worst. What the heck? I shined the light on the floor and noticed a silvery disc. Why hadn't I seen these before? I stepped on it, heard a weird sound, and became momentarily disoriented like before. Then I found myself on another disc just like it. A terrible stench filled the air here. I moved the light around and saw burnt tusks and the jelly of exploded blob things on the floor. I was certain then that the disc had acted like a mini teleporting pad. It had instantly moved me from one place to the other. Why would there be something like these silvery discs down here? I shrugged. I had no idea. I couldn't find any sign of Baran or the remaining tusks. Had I walked onto one of these silvery discs earlier and not even noticed that I'd been transferred farther afield? Could there be more of these discs or pads? I stepped off my silver pad and had another idea. I'd teleported in a straight line in the direction I'd walked onto the disc. What if I walked onto a disc from a different direction? Would that take me to a different disc down here? I felt a cold sweat on the back of my neck. This was all well and good, but I was still stuck down here in Greenland, deeper than I'd ever gone before. I didn't know if Baran would come back. I didn't know if living blob things were here and might attack me. What have you got to lose, Logan? I asked myself in a whisper. I nerved myself up, circled the small silver disc, and came at it from the left this time, what had been my left. As I stepped on it, I felt the disorientation, and I must have transferred... Chapter 22. Suddenly light snapped on all around me. I looked around wildly. I was in a small chamber that was completely different from where I'd been. This place seemed sterile, and I could feel heat beginning to blow from a vent in the metal-lined wall. It was as though my presence had activated the lights in the air system. I walked to the vent and put my hands in front of it, warming them. Wow, did it feel great. I kept staring around. There was just the one silver disc in the middle of the room. The light came from embedded ceiling plates. There wasn't any dust in here. Although the air was stale, it had started getting better right away. Screens began to come on and lights flashed from a panel that took up one of the walls. The room wasn't square or rectangular shaped. It was instead an octagonal shaped chamber. For some reason it had the feeling of being part of a hive. The ceiling had the same octagonal shape as the floor and it had 8 surrounding walls. I'd say the place was 40 by 40 feet in diameter. What had I stumbled onto? I went to the panel and studied the controls. I couldn't make hide nor hair of it. I went to a bank of screens. Some showed darkness. I presumed that was underground territory without light. I saw what I took to be Greenland because it had ice, snow, and peaks of solid rock jutting out here and there. I kept studying the various screens until finding one that was different. It was dark, with only starlight illuminating things. The place was also composed of ice and snow. I didn't see any mountain peaks poking up. Why was this place dark while Greenland was light? I rubbed my jaw. Of course. Nighttime. It was dark because this was somewhere else on Earth where the sun wasn't presently shining. A feeling of awe swept through me then. The chamber was ancient, and yet it was operating, at least in a fashion. How old was this room? Were the saber-tooths and mammoths upstairs an indication of the chamber's age? I unzipped my jacket because it was getting warm in here. If I wanted to leave, I could step on the silver disc. I frowned. That was a presumption. A potentially dangerous presumption. I'd have to step on the disc and see if I could leave. But what if I couldn't get back here? I didn't feel like going back into the cold underground cavern. I clicked off my flashlight and set it on the long panel. If only I had Rax. He might have been able to tell me what to do. In the Panera parking lot, Jenna must have fled with Rax. I hoped she was okay. I hoped Debbie was hanging in there. I began to pace in front of the long panel. I put my hands behind my back. I needed to do something. I couldn't just wait here. I had to make something happen. I had to risk testing the panel. In fact, I had to. A soft sound caused me to whirl around. Lord Baran stepped off the silver disc. He appeared surprised, looked around, and spotted me. I was so surprised to see him that for a moment I stood frozen. By the time I started for him, he had raised his baton and aimed the glowing part at me. That seemed like a hostile action. Thus, I changed my plan in mid-stride, lifting my right hand in greeting and grinning like an idiot. "Am I glad to see you?" I said. "Halt," Baran ordered. I stopped, letting my hand swing down to my side. I frowned as if perplexed by his action. While keeping the glowing part of the baton aimed at my chest, the Antaran studied the chamber. "Interesting," he said. "That's what I've been thinking." He focused on me, and the fingers gripping the baton tightened upon it.
"Am I to understand that you did not deliberately set up the ambush upon me and my creatures earlier?"
"Ambush? What are you talking about? I found myself far from you guys. Found this panel. Well, not this one, a different one. I pressed a few switches and nothing happened." Baran eyed me.
"Something did happen. You awakened the Grithys and they set upon us."
"What are Grithys?"
"The blob-like creatures we saw earlier in the stasis tubes."
"They woke up?" I asked, probably laying it on too thickly.
"You know they did. I can tell by the change of inflection in your voice. I'm coming to understand you, Kraling."
"You think I know how all this works?" I asked.
"No," Baran said. "I suppose you do not. I do not believe you have the intellect. You would have done something more interesting if you possessed such wisdom."
I almost said, "There you have it," but that would have come off as too breezy. He was insulting me again. Yes, that was the way to convince him. "You know, Baran, I don't care for your insults." He raised the baton.
"Cease your prattle. I weary of it. You are a devious, I won't say creature. You are a devious individual." "Yes. I have begun to take your measure. You must have accidentally unleashed the Grithys. Once you realized that I had departed, you decided to make your move. I thought you would. That was why I monitored your progress."
That verified my thoughts on the collar. We stared at each other. I had the feeling he wasn't telling the whole truth. He was hiding something. I didn't know what, but I could tell he was fabricating part of his story. "Care to explain about these Grithys and how you know about them?" I asked. He seemed to measure me with his gaze. Finally, he grinned.
"Yes, I believe I shall."
He cleared his throat, swung the baton behind his back, and took up a lecturer's stance.
"You could liken the Grithys to your legendary elves."
"Elves aren't real," I said.
"I did not say they were.
You called them a legend."
"A myth, then, if you prefer. Elves were capricious, but also inventive in your Earth myths. One class of elf, the dwarves, even made items for the gods. Thor's hammer was among the most famous."
"How do you know about all that?" I asked.
"I'm a dominie of the Institute."
As if that explained everything. "Okay," I muttered.
"Most who study galactic lore do not believe that the Grithys were real," Baran said. "Most scholars put the Grithys in the same mythical category as the Polarians. In any case, in the legends, the Polarians used the Grithys as artificers."
Meaning what?
Again, in legend, the Grithys were able to construct or manufacture complex pieces of technology. I suspect the Pallarian who built the Star Core used Grithys as his hands, as it were. The Pallarian would not have wielded the tools that built the Star Core himself. He would have given his instructions to the Grithys and overseen them as they built the crystal entity.
I was beginning to see what Baran meant. So, what does it mean that these Grithys were in the stasis tubes?
I give it two possible meanings, Baran said. One, like your ancient Egyptians did with servants and various burial items, the Grithys in the tubes were supposed to aid the Pallarians in the New World, in the afterlife, as you might think of it.
And two, I asked,
the Pallarians wanted to keep Grithys on tap for whenever they needed them again.
Do you know enough? Baran said.
You are not the interrogator, I am. Given your questions and obvious ignorance, I am beginning to wonder about you. You seem to be in the right place at the right time, or in the wrong place at the wrong time. It would depend on one's perception. In any case, in ways I cannot yet fathom, you are bound up with these Pallarians. You almost seem drawn to them.
I cocked my head, curious where his thoughts were headed. Baran's eyes glittered.
Step aside, he ordered.
I did. Baran swept past me and began to study the panel I hadn't dared touch. He looked up from time to time at the screens. He kept focusing on the one with the dark Arctic landscape. That place seemed to fascinate him.
I believe I have found the trail, he whispered fervently.
I almost launched myself at him. The Antaran had his back to me. If I could get a running start and club him hard enough, he should go down even harder. I was gathering myself when he turned toward me. I smacked my hands together as if I was agitated. He would obviously have seen I was tense. I had to divert him from the right conclusion.
What is it now? Baran asked testily.
This place is starting to get to me. I feel it closing in, almost shrinking as if to trap us.
Indeed, he said, glancing around. I had not felt that, but I think you may be right.
He sniffed experimentally and he exhaled explosively.
Run!
He cried.
What?
Baran charged me, shoving me toward the silver disc.
What's happening?
I said, stumbling.
Sleep gas, he said. Oh, the clever devils, they're trying to trap me.
I staggered onto the silver disc. It teleported me from the chamber back to the cold underground cavern. The momentum of the original push kept me stumbling, so I was off the pad when Baran appeared. That might have saved my life, if he'd appeared while I was on the teleport disc.
Run! Baran shouted.
I heard the worry in his voice. Instinctively, I started running for the floater with its ramp down. At that point, Baran whizzed past me, his feet no longer touching the ground. I glanced back and I saw the Grithys appearing on the silver disc. They had glowing sticks in their tentacles and they aimed those at us.
Fire! Baran shouted.
Tusks, who had been milling around the floater, raised their carbines and drilled green beams at the Grithys. The blob creatures exploded, spewing their jelly substance everywhere.
Hurry!
Baran called from the ramp. I ran as hard as I could. The Tusks began to drop their carbines in order to fight and claw their way up the ramp. They must have sensed before I did that the entire cavern was shaking as if the mother of all earthquakes had been unleashed upon us. Chapter 23 The Tusks clawing to enter the floater suddenly shrieked, falling back as they clapped their furry hands over their ears. They fell back, some falling off the ramp to thud upon the shaking cavern floor. Rocks had begun to rain down from the ceiling. I heard a sonic blast. It made my teeth ache, and I found it difficult to see through my watering eyes. However, the sound did not affect me to the same degree as it obviously did the Tusks. Staggering, crying out as a stone struck the back of my neck, I lurched up the ramp to supposed safety. Baran was at the entrance. He aimed the palms of his hands, directing them almost as if he... The sonic blast heightened to an ear-aching pitch as his palm swept into position aimed at me. I dropped onto the ramp, stunned and shaken. Fortunately, his palms kept moving, and the ache from the sonic blast lessened. Abruptly, he closed his fingers over his palms. The ache in my teeth instantly departed. My vision returned to normal. Rocks and boulders were striking the floater. They made booming, clanging noises. Another stone struck me, along with a shower of gravel in my hair.
Hurry, Baran said. Get inside.
I forced my limbs to move, struggling to reach him as I panted in desperation. A Around and below me, the tusks that had fallen began to stir. A few bled from the ears. One howled. A boulder had crushed his legs. As one, the tusks looked up at the entrance as if it was their only salvation. Was that how the lost souls in the antediluvian world had looked up at Noah's Ark as the flood began? Baran moved aside as I entered and the hatch slammed shut. The tusks outside the floater howled with despair. As I collapsed onto the floor, I heard some of the werewolf creatures beating on the closed hatch. I looked up at Baran. He seemed unconcerned as he ordered one of the few tusks inside the floater to take us where he wanted to go. The creature only hesitated a moment before tapping the flight controls. A huge boulder must have struck the floater. It clanged against us, shook us, and the floor vibrated under me. A moment later, the tusks hammering for admittance ceased and the raining rock ceased. I looked up once more. Baran studied a bulkhead screen. According to it, we were back above ground, cruising over Greenland snow. "What about the tusks down there?" I shouted. "We have to get them." Baran gave me a cursory glance. He did not seem to think the statement deserved an answer. He spoke to the pilot as he resumed studying the screen. I wasn't sure, but it seemed as if the werewolf creature hesitated. If Baran noticed, he didn't say anything about it as he studied the screen intently, but I had begun to believe that Baran missed little to nothing around him. I felt the shift of a transfer. It seemed to last a little longer than ordinary. I glanced at the wall screen. We teleported back onto the Earth side of the moon. I slid myself across the floor until I reached a bulkhead leaning against it. My neck hurt where the falling rock had struck it. Even though I was exhausted, I brushed grit off my head. I tried to understand why Baran had forced his tusks from the entrance. The only conclusion was that he'd wanted to save me. The tusks clawing for admittance had blocked my way. I knew Baran had little regard for me. He must believe I still knew things he didn't but wanted to. I studied him. Did he think the surviving tusks would forget such callousness? Wouldn't they rise up someday and try to destroy such a tyrant? I had no idea. I wasn't sure why we'd come back to the moon, and I didn't feel like talking to him just yet to find out. He'd saved my life, I acknowledged, but the callous way he'd murdered his servants, it was a wake-up call, if I'd needed it, that Lord Baran was utterly ruthless. Soon enough, we arrived inside a small hangar bay at the base on the dark side of the moon. All three floaters were back. I exited with Baran. Our floater looked like it had been in a demolition derby. Frankly, I was surprised we'd made it out of underground Greenland, and I was surprised the teleporting vehicle had had enough integrity left to hold an atmosphere in a vacuum. Soon enough, I found myself in a cell, this one bigger than before and with more amenities. I ate, showered, and slept the sleep of exhaustion. I might have dreamed. I couldn't remember any dreams when I woke up, but I knew I was glad to be awake. I puttered around for an hour, maybe two. A tusk finally showed up, taking me down the curving corridor. I felt an intense sense of deja vu. Had I even gone on the Greenland adventure, or was it one of my many dreams? I touched my neck. I wasn't as sore as before. The muscle had almost healed from the rock blow. I had been deep in Greenland. Yes, I had seen Grithys and been hit by a sonic blast coming out of Baran's palms. Was he a mutant? Did he possess, I don't know, psionic powers? Or was he a superhero, like in the comics I'd read as a kid? The task indicated an open hatch. I peered in, seeing Baran standing before several tables covered with what looked like charts. The Antaran looked up.
"Ah, Logan," he said, as if we were pals. "Do come in. I have something to show you."
I answered, taking a quick look around to see if any hidden tasks waited to add more shock collars to my neck. The hatch slid shut behind me. No tusks appeared. I decided to approach the tables, studying what looked like blueprints on them of, I don't know, underground cities, a giant hover car. I think I might have been too shell-shocked to comprehend what I saw.
"Do hurry, man," Baran said. "This is fascinating."
He stabbed a blueprint with an index finger. I had no idea what the symbols meant on the map. They might have been treasure sites on a D&D dungeon map for all I knew. The Grithys certainly seemed like technological ogres.
"I believe I finally found it,"
Baran declared. I looked up at him. His face was shining with excitement.
"Found what?"
I asked, surprised my voice was so hoarse.
"Why, the launch point portal of the Polarians," he said.
"I don't know what you mean by that."
"No?"
Baran asked.
Well, I think the director does. Director, would you come in here, please?
I heard the shuffle of feet and turned around. Walking through an opening side door was the director of the CAU. Unfortunately, he was quite naked, wore a shock collar, and had a considerable number of welts and burns crisscrossing his badly misused body. His bloodshot eyes met mine, and he stopped abruptly.